Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is Tuesday, April 10th, 2018, and this is Ralph Pointer, What's Happening. And tonight, as every Tuesday at 9, we analyze an anatomy of oppression. We say it requires an anatomy of colonialism and imperialism. We feel that an anatomy of the American capitalist system is necessary in order to understand oppression. And one of the things we are talking about this evening, among many topics, is guns, guns, guns. What about that? But we're also fascinated by the fake news. Russiagate. Give us a break. So without further ado, I want to turn the microphone over to Brother Ralph, and I want to give a shout-out to all of our comrades who are on the call tonight, and we're asking you to be ready. Come out with your thoughts blazing. I dare not say the other word. We dare not mention the G word. Brother Ralph is in the house.
Thank you, Sister Betty. Brothers and sisters, my credo, what I believe, the overriding element in every situation or circumstance in a black life is racism. Birth, elementary school, housing, health, food, etc. Black lives have never mattered except during slavery and other circumstances where money is being made by our labors for others. The modern death penalty, 80% black, moved lynching indoors. The police as the army of occupation have taken lynching outside again. The lynch mob is the racist system, including the courts and the media. And because the lives of our heroes and sheroes who once protected us in our community do not matter to us, the people, our political prisoners are now dying in captivity. They are tortured and isolated. Only armed struggle can recreate our image in our own minds as well as the minds of others. Wake up. Now is the time. And again, we are going to try to take some smoke out of the news to bring reality to what people are talking about. And they talk about they're going to do away with guns. They have the young people believing that guns are the problem. But let us talk a little bit about the reality of guns. The reality of guns in America started a long, long time ago when they talk about guns in America and they don't include the situation or the circumstance where they are mainly focused on people of color. This is where the whole thing of gun control got started in America. But it was started before it came to America. And whenever you talk about anything in America, if you look back far enough, you can see that people of color, the Africans born in America, are where the problem and the solution for the problem is rooted in, understanding what has happened. Now, I'm going to go back with guns in Europe. Let's start around 1800. And I see this is the first days of spring, and people are riding their motorcycles. And one of the motorcycles that was very popular back in the day, the 60s, the 70s, and 80s, was the BSA, you know, the British motorcycle, like Triumph BSA, Birmingham Small Arms. Now, what does Birmingham Small Arms have to do with motorcycles, have to do with guns? Well, around 1800, a religious man was involved in making of guns and small arms. And it became a religious question as to whether a person could be a Quaker and be involved with guns, making of guns, money with guns. Well, this Quaker was involved in making small arms, therefore Birmingham Small Arms, BSA, and we don't have time to go into what happened with this small company, but it got so big that they had to have a bank of their own. Imagine, bank of their own. Now, there's a whole history of where this bank went. Now, remember, it was all based on guns. It ended up with Midland Bank, and then it turned to HSBC, Hong Kong Shanghai Banking Corporation, which is one of the biggest banking organizations in the world today, based on guns. And why did people need so many guns? Guns were a part of the Industrial Revolution. And so how did guns become a part of the Industrial Revolution? Well, it was because they needed to make guns quickly, a large amount, and there's a science of making anything fast. And the cheaper and the better you made them, the more effective economically you could be. And why did they need so many guns? Well, if you go back to European history, it's an imperialist world out of Europe. Who were they subjugating at the time? India, Africa, and brown peoples around the world. And so they needed a lot of guns. They needed them quickly, and I'm going to skip over a lot of history there. But they needed guns to keep oppressed people oppressed. And then once they were oppressed, they had to keep the guns out of the hands of the oppressed people, because if they had guns, they would use them to become unoppressed, if you know what I mean. Revolution, armed struggle, etc. And it is also connected, because today America is fighting the longest war in its history in Afghanistan. Well, what is this about Afghanistan having so many guns? Well, when the British conquered India, after they conquered India, they had to keep the guns out of the hands of the Indians, the oppressed people. And so, as all people who need things that are illegal, made illegal for them to have, it wasn't illegal for the British to have guns, it was illegal for the Indians to have guns, the people of the country of India. And so there was smuggling of guns involved. And what did they come? What was the route? The route to India was through Afghanistan. And therefore, we have a history of making, repairing, selling, smuggling of guns in Afghanistan. Do you see where it is all connected? And guns were needed in America to oppress the Africans brought to America, to oppress the Africans in Africa. And gun control? Well, you have to make sure these Africans don't have guns, because the obvious use of guns can be applied to by oppressed Africans. Gun control. What is it all about? It is about keeping guns out of the hands of oppressed people, allowing the oppressor to have guns. All of these young people who have been killing Americans, these people who have been involved in mass murder, are white, because there's no perceived problem of keeping the guns out of white people's hands. And so now we see legislation saying no more wholesale selling of guns to young white people. They have to be 21. But it is a laugh when you think of gun control and the guns in the country and the history of guns and what they're all about. No one tells you these things that we have just mentioned. Therefore, all of the news, all of the media, everything about guns is fake news, because it is not honest news. They do not tell you why the issue of guns has come about, and how it is that everyone in America has a gun. We could go on with the basic tenets of capitalism. If you make it, you got to sell it. And there's been a competition of making guns out of the Industrial Revolution. You make them faster and better, and everybody has a gun. And the question is, how is everyone able to get a gun and keeping it out of the hands of oppressed people? This is the problem. And if anybody doesn't talk about that, they're involved in fake news. I could keep going all evening on this question with guns, but I've been given the sign, the hook. It's time for me to step back and turn the mic over to Sister Betty so we can continue the conversation of the real news, what it's all about, what's happening. Again, Sister Betty.
Thank you, Brother Ralph. This line is long tonight. Many, many people are in the queue. Once again, we have had, you know, another act of terrorism by the so-called forces of law and order, which is really the army of occupation. We have lost another citizen to gun violence by the police. And Brooklyn has been protesting and raising its fist. The issue is, how do you control the police? Well, community control of the police will come when we have a revolution, because you can't have a civilians review board for an army of occupation. The Vietnamese did not have a civilian review board. Without further ado, we're going to change our order of schedule tonight. We've had so many crises and serious issues around our political business. We're going to take a step back and bring Brother Larry on after we hear Sister Ann Lamb. We know she has a lot to update us on with regard to our brother Seth Hayes and with our brother Herman Bell. Ann, your mic is open.
Hey, thank you so much, Sister Betty. Always good to be on this wonderful broadcast with all of you. Well, as people know, Herman Bell is having a hearing. Well, he's not having a hearing. He will not be there. But there's being hearing held in Herman's case on Friday, April 13th, up in Albany at State Supreme Court. Bob Boyle, his attorney, longtime attorney Bob Boyle, believes this to be a frivolous, a frivolous lawsuit, and it should get dismissed. But as we know, in other cases, such as for Ron Zabalas, who should have been out in 2004 and is still sitting in prison in the federal system, and, several other people, Matu Lucicora, who should have been out, and has been denied, and Bill Dunn, who's been denied and given a 15-year hit, and Leonard Peltier, and so on, that, when it comes to our political prisoners, the law does not apply, shall we say. So, we're all on tenterhooks about that. But we'll see what happens. And, I'm not going to talk too much about Herman, because there are certain people who have been doing his defense work for years who have, taken the lead on that. I don't want to misspeak in any way. But we'll all be paying attention to see what happens at that hearing on Friday. Now, we just saw Robert Seth Hayes, number 74A, 2280, on Sunday, which was an interesting and strange visit, to say the least. Also went up with Dan Jaffe, and also from New York City, Jericho, and Sharon Schultz, Maroon's daughter. She got to meet Jaleel, so that was nice. We were originally supposed to go see Herman on Sunday, but because of this latest development, he had to see somebody else. So we said, okay, not a problem. We will see our visit, because we know that all this upcoming stuff is very important. So I said to Sharon, would you like to come and meet Jaleel? And she said, sure. So they had an excellent visit. And I went in a little late. We got there very early, but I went in a little late because I wanted to make sure that Seth, since they've taken away the pump and he hasn't had it and he's depending totally on insulin shots and finger sticks, I wanted to make sure he got his 11 o'clock, insulin shot and finger stick before coming upstairs. So I told them that down in processing, and they said, well, wait till like 10:30. And I said, okay, I can do that. Had the key to the car, went back outside, sat in the car, made a few phone calls, etc. Came back in at 10:30, they processed me in, go upstairs. Okay, they say they're going to bring Seth upstairs. Okay, so I'm up there, it's 11. It's 11:30, it's 12, right? Oh, no, now we're going to wait until the count clears. They have to count every prisoner every day, starting at about 11, I think. So the count cleared at 12:08 p.m. So I was like, okay, 12:30, he's still not upstairs. So then they say, oh, no, now you're going to go downstairs to visit him, which didn't make sense. On Good Friday, when he could barely walk, they brought him upstairs. Sunday, when he was actually in much better shape, they insisted I have to go downstairs. And the Parole Prep Project women had been to see him the day before, and he was allowed to come upstairs. So I don't know what all was going on with these people. So I went downstairs to the infirmary, and I was allowed to bring to purchase food that I had bought for us to eat. And then I get down there, and they say, oh, the microwave hasn't worked here for months. So I said, okay, I'll go back upstairs to heat up the food. And then they told me, oh, there's nobody to escort you. I know the way, but we must be escorted, you know. So I said, well, that's interesting, because there's three COs sitting up in the visiting room doing nothing, including CO Jones, who just brought me down. And, you know, they weren't going to listen. But then Seth said, there's the sergeant. So I went and talked to the sergeant, and I said, I'm going to pass out if I don't eat. You know, didn't say anything about Seth not eating. I said, I'm going to pass out if I don't eat. And so he said, oh, that wouldn't be good. We don't want a code blue on a visitor in the infirmary. And so he had somebody bring me upstairs quick, heated up the food, came back downstairs. And that was good because they actually hadn't given Seth his 11 o'clock insulin shot and finger stick until after the count. So he didn't get it until like 12:15. And it was about 1 by then. So good timing that he needed to eat. You know, we shared all the food. And, you know, had a small visit. And then as soon as I left, no sooner had I left, you know, the infirmary at 3, that they took Seth into a medical isolation unit, quote-unquote, on direct orders from Dr. Wolf. So we still to this day don't know if that was on direct orders from Dr. Wolf or not. He has no need to be in a medical isolation unit. He doesn't have a communicable disease. Congestive heart failure is not contagious. Diabetes is not contagious. High blood pressure is not contagious. So, you know, he has no idea why he was in there, and still he doesn't know. But he's out now back in his cell as of today, which is a good thing. He was glad about that. And he also has the most horrible shiner. I asked him, oh, were you in a boxing match? Because he had a fall last week. Thursday morning early, his sugars were so low, he just passed out and smashed his face right into the floor, was bleeding profusely over the right eye. So now he has this big shiner, you know, looks like somebody hit him. And so we're still trying to get him up to see the endocrinologist at Albany Medical Center, which should have happened in March and which still has not happened. And so we're still asking people to call, fax, and email the chief medical officer, which is Dr. Carl Koenigsmann, and also to call the superintendent at Sullivan. So all of that is up on our website, jerichony.org. I would encourage people to go and look at it and check it out. There's also some updates about Herman and some interviews you can watch about Herman Bell. That is Jose Saldana, who is a brother who did time with Herman and just got out after 38 years, and his longtime attorney, Robert Boyle. They were both on Democracy Now! On April 6th, so I would advise people to check that out. You can hit one link, it'll give you part one, and then right next to it there's part two. So those would be good things to watch as well. And, you know, to get the best political, you know, take on what's happening here. And also, we still have our friend, political prisoner, Sister Reverend Joy Powell, who is still having to deal with the fact that she did a TV interview back at the end of January exposing the brutality of the Bedford Hills Correctional Facility. And so she's being harassed, and she's been placed in the SHU, and, you know, all these kinds of things are going on with her. And she also has diabetes. So there is a SHU exclusion law, which is meant to prohibit confining seniors with health issues in solitary, right? And she's a diabetic and has not been able to monitor her blood sugar because of this. And Sergeant McDaniels has not been allowing her to carry snacks at all times, which she needs to do because of her diabetes. So we're also asking people to please call and write. Interestingly, this guy's name, Joseph Joseph. He's the superintendent at Bedford Hills. And there's also this number, Don Venitozzi, who oversees discipline at New York State Docs. And they have a little, you know, there's a little script for you to read, and, you know, you can always change it to your own words. But that's still been ongoing on for her as well. So we have Seth with that problem, medical, Reverend Joy with that problem, serious medical, and, of course, everybody's on tenterhooks as to what will happen on Friday with Herman. So everybody should pay strict attention. Definitely go and make those phone calls. They have made a huge difference. Brother Jihad called up today to Koenigsmann's office, and he said, the woman he spoke to said, they have been receiving thousands of calls. So that is excellent. Keep it up. That's the only thing they respond to is pressure. They will not do the right thing because it's the right thing. They will do the right. They will never do the right thing unless we ask them to. And we must insist and persist.
And what we need to say is, it's over for Cuomo. It's over for de Blasio. Do you understand?
That's absolutely. What we need it's to over for them. Yes.
Yes. Hold up.
You know, they came out against a totally lawful decision by the parole board. So, you know,
Thank you, Ann.
As I'm concerned, that's over for both of them. Absolutely. Nobody should vote for either one of them.
Thank you. Ralph, you're in the house.
Well, thank you for that, Ann. We must make sure that it is over politically for both of those gentlemen. You would be supporting political prisoners when we learn how to vote against our enemies. Sister Betty.
Brother Larry Pinckney, waiting in the wings. Your mic is open.
Thank you. Much appreciated. All power to the people. Thank you, Sister Professor Betty Davis. Thank you, Brother Ralph. And my dear, dear sister, what a fantastic report that you gave. Thank you so very, very, very much. Let me say this to begin with. Our black, white, brown, red, and yellow political prisoners across the spectrum are languishing. You all know this. We all know this. If you don't, then go to Mars. All right? The reality is that we need to deal with it for not only them, not only our brothers and sisters going through hell in these gulags that they call prisons, these torture camps, but we need to deal with it for ourselves, for our own self-dignity, for our own humanity, on behalf of those who gave so much and who are still giving. It's the gift that has not stopped, the gift that is continuing to give. But are we willing to recognize that gift? Now, let me act quickly or talk quickly. Forgive me, because I know there are others who are waiting to speak. Let me say that many of you are aware of the fact that I speak often of Brother Leonard Peltier, originally of the American Indian Movement. This brother needs to be supported. One of the wonderful things that Leonard, who I knew personally, but that's neither here nor there, really, it's irrelevant. Leonard is a fantastic painter.
Yeah.
Incredible painter. And if you go, just Google his name, for God's sake, just put his name in, even in Google, that fascist Google, you'll come up with how you can buy and support Brother Leonard, who continues to be in prison for so many decades, since 1976. This is what, 2018? Yes, I said since 1976. So let me move on quickly. I'm talking quickly because I want to be respectful so other people can get on. Let me refer to Brother Herman Bell, all right? And let me point out that the son, I repeat, the son of the officer who was slain, let me quote to you what the son said. Quote, he wrote a letter to the parole board. Quote, keeping Mr. Bell in jail after all these years would serve no purpose other than vengeance, something that we as a family do not need or want, unquote. Okay? Reverly Jones Jr., son of the slain officer. You know what? Sometimes I think we forget that we have allies out there who are waking up, and we need to do our duty to keep on waking them up. But we also need to do our duty to make sure that when they make statements like this, we spread it. We spread it far and wide. All right. Now, let me move on very quickly. Sorry I'm talking so fast, but I got to do this out of respect. You know, people talk about gun control. Want to talk about gun control? Let me recommend a book for you. The name of the book is, quote, Gun Control in the Third Reich. Gun Control in the Third Reich. Okay? The book is written by Stephen Halbrock, H-A-L-B-R-O-C-K. All right? The name of the game is all about taking away our ability to have self-defense. There probably would have been no deacons for defense. I'm going to assume you all know what I'm talking about. If you don't, Google it. Deacons for Self-Defense, which was prior to the Black Panther Party. And there probably would have been no Black Panther Party had we not adhered to the right to self-defense. All right?
Absolutely.
So I'm going to leave it at that. There's so much more I'd like to say. But I want to emphasize that we need to wake the freak up. And understand that all of us are engaged in this, whether we like it or not. As Jamil Al-Amin, formerly known as H.R.E.P. Brown, used to say, whether we like it or not. All power to the people. Love you. Love all of my brothers and sisters. Love everyone on this program. All power to the people. Thank you so very much.
Thank you so much for that, Larry Pinkney, political prisoner, ex-political prisoner, Black Panther. 10 years in the other side of the wall. Next, we have Raymond Nat Turner, the fantastic poet who has poetry, education through poetry. Raymond Nat Turner, are you here?
Yes, I am. Okay, this piece is called Boss Tweet, Latest Poster Boy for the Warfare States Pyramid Scheme. Ochre, shadow, bearing skulls and crossbones. Ruby River draining from pyramid's base. An endless death rattle of bombs and drones. Threatening to drown the whole human race. With its weaponized Ponzi scheme plus pomp, nightmare rebranded American dream, bad hombre bubbling from the draining swamp, poster boy, 1% pyramid scheme, Mussolini mascot walking war crime, a dumb warhead with homicidal heart on, oozing up from rot of capitalist slime, pussy-grabbing paper towel-tossing pawn, another useful idiot, warlord, and moron, silly putty handled by the Pentagon. Blitzkrieg of thieves on a wild rampage, wild boars at the trough slurping up slop, like cancer metastasizing to a fifth stage, bloodsuckers below the pyramid's top, fathering still more wars for fossil fuels and thoughts and prayers for shot-up schools, peddling patented dog-eat-dog cures. I got mine, and now I'm coming for yours.
Again, one more time, education through politics, and for anybody who doesn't understand, right at the very beginning, Boss Tweet refers to Mr. Trump, and Boss Tweed was a reference to New York City history about the total corruption and how they got away with it for years. Thank you so much for that, Raymond Nat Turner. Look for the poetry of Raymond Nat Turner on the web and wherever you have an opportunity to go hear this wonderful poet educate you politically. Mr. Betty.
Brother Tom, mic is open.
Thank you. I received an email from two friends of mine who are staunch Democrats. I'd like to just read my reply to them. The email starts, their email starts off with, Obama should have fired James Comey on the spot the first time he broke the law and held that horrendous press conference while the president and Hillary were in the air on their way to a rally where Obama would have made his support formal. To me, Comey and Sanders did more to elect Trump than all the Russians, Kochs, and Mercers combined. And I'd really like to see Mueller take a look at the financing and support for both Sanders and Jill Stein. I'm only to bet that a thorough audit would reveal the presence of the same sorts of money and support streams in their campaign that are now bedeviling Trump. Well, here we go again. And so I decided to write them and their friends, their Democratic friends, this response. In my opinion, the main factor that elected the proto-fascist Trump was the Democratic Party's abandonment of the American working class, both white and black. This became especially obvious to blue-collar workers during the Clinton and Obama administrations. Furthermore, the leaderships of most of unions have become lazy in their positions and have maintained a comfortable relationship with the Democratic Party. And this has caused a growing number of rank and file to either not vote or even vote Republican. Only 50% of the eligible voters have been voting in the national elections, and even a smaller percentage in local elections. Hillary got around 50% of the vote, but since only 58% of those eligible voted, she got a total of 27% of the eligible voters in the 2016 election. Trump successfully portrayed himself as an outsider, independent of the political establishment. He correctly, even though opportunistically, criticized the international trade agreements, such as NAFTA, that were a large factor of the outsourcing much of our industry overseas. Trump also brought up multinational corporations setting up their headquarters in foreign tax havens, such as the Bahamas. The seeming inability of the government to limit and regulate the use of cheap immigrant labor, both legal and undocumented, and the funding of both parties by the 1%. Although part of the 1% himself, Trump brought up the bailing out of the big banks by the U.S. Treasury and the failure to bail out the working class in the collapse of the economy in 2007-2008, a collapse that the big banks had caused in the first place. Obama failed to use the bully pulpit to appeal directly to the American public to get Congress to effectively regulate the speculative investments of Wall Street. The attacks on the working class were supported by the Clinton and Obama administrations, and Hillary was correctly perceived as part of the political establishment and unable to offer a more progressive policy despite Bernie Sanders' entry into the Democratic primary. The last thing the Democratic Party is willing to do is to blame itself and its economic policies for its defeat. Instead, it blames Putin, Comey, and even Bernie Sanders. But the most pathetic scapegoat is the Green Party candidate Jill Stein, who got a whopping 0.5% of the vote. Michael wants Mueller to investigate the funding of Sanders and Stein campaigns. I think that a more fruitful investigation by Mueller would reveal where the Hillary campaign got its funding. I have been told by Democrats that there is only room in our so-called democracy for two parties, that small third parties only act as spoilers. But the real spoilers is a duopoly of two corporate parties vying for huge amounts of money from the mega corporations and banks.
Thank you,
Tom. I'm going to send that out to as many Democrats as I know.
Let me tell you this, Tom. Most of the Democrats have been bamboozled, brainwashed, intimidated, etc., and I wonder what good intelligence do to them, for them,
well,
or for
I just like them. I would like them to at least have the opportunity to read another alternative opinion. It may not do any good, I agree.
Thank you again, and Sister Betty.
Brother Joel, your mic is open. Are you still in the house?
Hey, Joel.
Joel, hello.
Yes, hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Good. I think, the program started out with this talk about gun control and guns and everything, and we've been given that spectacle to be presented as a youth movement. Is this something so big could come together without organization behind it? Mm-hmm. So you have these high school kids out in the street, and they're afraid to be in high school because high school could be attacked by a lunatic or something, they feel, and you got to take everybody's guns away is the answer that we're being asked to accept by the people behind the scenes that are using a lot of the understandable feelings of these kids. But like I said last week, I remember when there were anti-war demonstrations, which, by the way, an anti-war demonstration in a certain way is a gun control demonstration because they're trying to control the guns of the real mass murderers and imperialists that keep the world at gunpoint and may end up blowing the entire world up, all for the benefit of imperialists that are robbing the resources and the labor power of all the people around the world. So there were hundreds of thousands, some of them were upwards of 1 million people demonstrating against imperialist wars. And you know what? It wasn't put on the front pages. It wasn't presented in the same way as the gun control demonstrations recently to control the guns of not of the ones that really have the gigantic oversupply of guns, but the gun control of ordinary people who are under a ferocious attack from the super rich. They want to disarm the 99% and to convince the 99% that only the police and the military should have guns. And the rest of us should just be at gunpoint, and that might save us from some shooters up high schools or something. This is an absolutely, and I think it's an example of how we get manipulated, that a spectacle is presented in the media, and then we are told that we have no choice but to react in the way that the media, which again is owned by the millionaires and trillionaires, we're not talking merely about the 1%, we're talking about 1% of 1% of 1% that call the shots. And what they're talking about gun control is really mind control. They want us to have a certain attitude. And our attitude has to be that basically we all submit to law and order, and then we rely on law and order, the armed agents of the super rich, to protect us. It's a crazy thing. Now, we saw what the real message of gun control is on the border between the what's called Israel proper. Some people refer to it as a Zionist entity, and the people of Gaza. The people massed on the border of Gaza to assert their right to return from the land that they were living on and were driven out of. And they were doing it in a totally nonviolent way. They were doing it after the example of Martin Luther King. And instead of getting the dogs and the tear gas and everything else, they got direct gunfire from Israeli commandos and sharpshooters that fired right into the unarmed crowd that only wanted to make a symbolic act of trying to climb the fences and everything else. In fact, the first shot that was fired, according to the media, killed a farmer on the other side of that fence who was picking his parsley crop. That's what, and as a result, this shows what gun control is really all about when it's presented by the imperialists. It's not about guns, it's about control. And I want to say also that people should bear in mind that, and I know that the revolution in the United States in 1776 was a very complex phenomenon with different aspects to it. And there are different reasons, but in order to drive out the Redcoats, who a lot of people, not just slave owners and squaw killers, but a lot of people experienced tyranny at the hand of the British military, and they fought back. There were massacres in Lexington and Concord, for example, but people fought back. And when the Constitution was imposed on the country, a lot of the people would not allow the states to ratify the Constitution unless it had a Bill of Rights. And the First Amendment, what we know as the First Amendment, free speech and everything else, is not the real First Amendment. The Second Amendment is the real First Amendment, because without the Second Amendment, without the exercise of armed struggle, there wouldn't have been even the promise of any of the other rights, the officially called First Amendment and so on. It was the fact that people stood up for their rights, and we have the same question today, although I would say today it's really the real thing is that we have to replace the capitalist dictatorship with a socialist system that's based on the poor and working people, oppressed people, and that's the struggle that is the only way that we could solve even the smallest problems that capitalism is increasingly imposing on the rest of us. And it can't be done in a purely pacifistic way. I respect pacifists because they stand up for what they believe in, but I wouldn't overindulge them to tell everybody to act in the same way and to renounce self-defense and so on. So I would say that that we have to keep our eyes on the prize, and even though the context is different, the solutions are vastly different today than they were 250 or so years ago. That one thing is still the same thing, that the power either resides in the hands of the people, or it resides in the hands of the 1% of the 1% of the 1%, and the ones that they want to use as armed agents to keep the rest of us at gunpoint, or if they get the idea that population reduction is a favorable thing, to just wipe out a lot of people and to engineer scenarios, certain types of wars and everything. Now,
all right, Joe, I think you have made the point very clear as to where power must reside. And people refuse to give up their guns. Very important. The army of occupation of the British, the army of occupation of the American, called the police. And with that, we'll call on Sister Vivian. Are you there? Vivia, are you with us? Your microphone is open, Vivia Morgan. If not, then the microphone of Gwen Goodman is open.
Hi, Ralph. Hi, everybody. It's Gwen Goodwin. Everybody there?
Yes.
We're all waiting to hear your words of fire.
Okay, so I have a couple of things that I just wanted to an announcement. There's a young man. There's a man named Jamal Thomas. He has been in prison for 38 years for attempting to shoot a policeman. However, the policeman lived. He did not die. But he's been in solitary confinement for 20 years. He is residing at Five Points in Romez, New York. Now, I do not have a contact number, but I just want to put this out here because 20 years is unbelievable. It's cruel and unusual punishment. My friend Lawrence Killebrew, who is an Attica survivor, he was shot five times, asked me if I would help him to get this man at least released back into the regular population and taken out of solitary confinement. So if anybody wants to get involved in helping me with this, I'd appreciate the help. The things that I'm listening to tonight, I thank you, everybody, so far, especially Joel. I really found the whole thing very enlightening. What's really bothering me is taking a walk down the streets of New York and Manhattan these days and realizing that our cannibalistic capitalism seems to be really falling down on us now. And I keep hearing how wonderful the economy is. However, shop after shop is closing. They are closing. These are places that are successful. They've been in business for many years. And I walked through a store the other day where one of the shop girls told me how scared they are of having the stores closed down because the next bit of propaganda has been to tell people that people prefer to shop online and so that we're going to have to start closing. And indeed, we are closing many, many retail stores. And this is the last vestige of any kind of employment in the United States because we've gotten rid of all industry. We're a service country. And if you get rid of the rest of the stores, I don't know where people are going to work. They're already working for very low wages at these stores, but at least there's employment. And I think that this is propaganda. I absolutely know this about myself. I can't just go out and buy a pair of jeans online and not go out, sit in my house and do that. I have to try on a pair of pants about 10 times to get the right one. And I assume many other women, at least women, are in the same boat. So I just think that the idea that the boob tube is telling you today that people do not want to go and shop at retail is just a line. It's just going to make this small percentage of people even wealthier than what they are. So I think that I would ask people not to believe that. I also have been listening to James Fetzer this week. I've been looking for him online because he's been taken down. And I think, as I said, I've been saying that I am very suspectful of all of these different shootings that are happening. There's just something that does not sit right with me. And there, if you look into these investigations that independent reporters have been doing, you will hear that a lot of this stuff does not line up. And again, I feel very uncomfortable about this shooting at YouTube. This woman, I mean, it's all so crazy. I just don't believe that it is as the media says it is. So I would caution people not to, you know, just believe everything they hear. Last thing I want to say is that, you know, we're constantly bashing the Democratic and Republican Party. Well, mostly the Democratic Party here. I myself have had to run in the past as a Democrat because there's only really two choices. I mean, I could run on a green ticket, but that means that I threw away my chance essentially to win in the election. And I think that the only way to really solve this is to get rid of all the parties and just ask people to vote for the candidate that they think is the most qualified, the candidate that they think that they have the most in common with, the one that's going to do the most, and the one that has the reputation or the body of work to support what they have done and what their ideals have been. I think that is probably the fastest way to get out of the two-party system, because I don't see us getting anywhere when we're even mentioning, you know, a third party. The Green Party's been around for a long time. They have fantastic ideas, but it doesn't seem to be really taking a hold. But I do know that there's, as I said before, there are many towns in the United States that don't vote with any kind of party. You go in and you actually don't even know the party of the person who's running, but you've got to hear them in the public square. You've got to hear them speak. And I think that this might be a doable way to solve this problem of the two-party system. And the last thing I wanted to say is I'm very concerned because of what's happening in Israel, where they're not only firing at the Palestinians that are peacefully standing on the other side of the line, but it makes me really worried that Trump is looking at that and getting ideas, and now we've fully armed the border of Mexico. I don't believe those people in the National Guard are just going to sit there and watch this. They're bringing way too much equipment. And I wonder if we're just going to start using this heavy equipment to start shooting at these people that are escaping, you know, the terrible, terrible injustices of their country. Most of them are not coming here because they want to. They're coming here because they have to. So I wonder if Trump is going to get any ideas. And last thing is, I'm terrified of going to war with Russia. I really believe this push to go to war with Russia is coming to fruition. I believe that once Trump fires Mueller, that you're going to see we're going to find somebody that's going to lead us into war with Russia, and I really feel bad about that. I think that's the absolute last thing we should do. They are fully equipped, and they are going to be – it's going to be something terrible. That's my share tonight.
Thank you so much for that. We're trying to cover so many subjects. There is so much that is going wrong. And I wanted to add a while back that the woman Jean Harris had written a book on torture at Bedford many years ago. And it just goes on and on and on. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to give us a comment on what we have been talking about this evening or something that they would like to talk about?
Folks, all of the mics open. Vivia, okay. Your mic is still open. But we see you on the line, but we can't hear you. Hello?
I was going to make a comment about 5 Points. 5 Points is a giant shoe facility. Everybody is like in their own cell there. And sort of in solitary. That's where Abdul-Majid was. That's where they killed Abdul-Majid, all right? Mm-hmm. So that the fact that brother's in 5 Points, 20 years in solitary confinement is extremely concerning. And I'm sure anything that we could do would be good. Unfortunately, we don't have his name and DIN number, which would
no,
make
no,
it
I
have.
No, I have his name. I do have his name.
And
it's
his number?
Jamal Thomas. And
Jamal
next
Thomas.
Week I will get... Yes, and I will get the rest of the information next week too, okay? But it is
okay.
Jamal Thomas, and he is at 5 Points. And 20 years is terrible. I mean, he's been in prison for 38 years, and 20 of those 38 have been at this 5 Points.
More than half. Yeah, the whole place is a giant shoe. It's horrible.
Well,
I'd
like to say something. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Larry. I was going to ask. Go ahead.
Go ahead, brother. Go ahead, sister.
No, Larry, I was going to say that you had supported a candidate who wasn't Green. Please go ahead.
Well, I just want to say this. I supported a candidate who was actually, he wasn't Green. He ran as a Democrat, even though, with all due respect, I really don't believe he was. He's an independent, and he won. George Soros funded his opposition, and we still beat them. George Soros, that billionaire piece of scum. But anyway, my comment was simply this, that, you know, when it comes to so-called guns, it's not just about guns. It's really about self-defense. Remember, for all of those of you who really pay attention to history, remember what Fidel told to Salvador Allende, but Allende did not listen. He said, arm your people. Arm
yes, he did.
Your people. All right.
Yeah, he did say that. Yes, he did.
Said, but I was constitutionally elected. And Fidel said, it doesn't matter. Arm
right.
your people. And look what
right.
happened.
Yep, yep.
All right,
that's
I've got to giving all of you
yeah.
a summary of the Black is Back Conference on Electoral Politics. If
oh,
you
great.
Have the time, there are two things. Go to the Black Agenda Report for March the 1st and look at what's happening in terms of the emptying out of the black community all over the country. Black Agenda Report, March 1st, 2018. And get on the Black is Back website to get the videos of the speeches of the different people and how you run for election. You should be running, be it PTA president, community board, parent, or an election for the Congress or an election for the city council. We need to take back our country. If you're
yes,
not going to the way they did in 1776, at least take back the country from these corrupt Democrat Republicans. There is no difference between the two parties. The only difference is us. Brother Ralph?
Yep.
Thank you so much for that, and look forward to speaking to all of my brothers.
Yep. I have Jamal Thomas's DIN number, 81A2941.
All the chains